Hi, I'm Veronica Rickard in This Morning for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And I'm glad to be keeping you company today. This hour, we'll be talking with Paul Krugman. He's a columnist for the New York Times and a professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University. His latest book is called The Conscience of a Liberal, and we'll be talking about the economy with Paul Krugman, taking a look at where the recession might be headed, how long it will last, and what we can do about it. So that's coming up in just a few moments, so stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, I'd like to take a moment to give you an introduction, or rather an update, on how Kathleen Dunn is doing. Normally, of course, we'd be listening to her right now, her lovely voice, but she is at home recovering from heart surgery. She's doing quite well. The prognosis is good. In fact, we talked to her last week, and she sounded great, very strong, and we're looking forward to having her back. She's, in fact, already planning an hour on women and heart health, so the talk show host is clicking away there, and I'm sure we'll hear lots of great programs when Kathleen Dunn returns. In the meantime, it is our winter membership drive, and I'm joined in the studio by Wisconsin Public Radio Director Phil Corvo. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Veronica.
And John Munson, all the way from Superior. He's joining us in the Madison studios. Hi, John Munson.
Good morning, Veronica.
Thank you so much. And we're looking for a goal of $3,000 this hour for Wisconsin Public Radio for the programs you've come to enjoy. Maybe you're a fan of Kathleen's All Things Political Hour, which is 9 o'clock on Mondays. Lots of political junkies, including Kathleen and myself. If you're a political junkie, it's time to support the programming that you listen to, that you love, that you depend on. So help us get going this morning with a chip away at that $3,000 goal. You can help us by calling 1-800-383-9772, or you can try our website, wpr.org.
And this is a great time to do it. If you've been waiting all weekend and during this pledge drive, we have a challenge grant during this hour. If we reach our goal of $3,000, we will receive an extra $1,000 from Jim and Barbara Ballard. That's a very generous challenge grant on the table, $1,000 extra dollars. So you can kind of think of it as stretching your dollars when you pledge during this hour. 1-800-383-9772. No better time to do it than right now. Is that right, John?
Whatever you say, Phil. you know, that those challenge grants, that's like tipping over the couch and finding a $100 bill. You know, this is kind of like found money. It's a great opportunity. We don't want to miss it. So when we make that goal, we'll get that extra money, and that'll multiply everyone's pledge. Now, here's another way you can multiply your pledge. Be sure to ask your employer if they will match your contribution. Many corporations will match your charitable giving, and you can check with your HR department and find out if they'll match your donation. And you can probably double your money again. But wait, there's more. At the $120 level of support for Wisconsin Public Radio, you get the famous member benefit card, the card that really does pay you back. Good for two-for-one entrees at many restaurants around the state, and B&Bs, and cultural attractions, and even internet shopping now. If you use that card regularly, you'll get your pledge back and then some. So it's like having your cake and eat it too. So win-win-win all the way around. We've got the challenge grant that we're going to make. We've got the member benefit card, and we've got a website just waiting for you to go and make a pledge and save a tree, wpr.org. Or if you'd like some real human contact to start your Monday morning, call us at 800-383-9772.
1-800-383-9772 is that number to call. And as John said so eloquently about tipping over a couch and finding $100, that sounds pretty good. I mean, it's a great way to supersize your pledge this morning. It's not every day. Like, imagine if you got an interest rate like that on your money in the bank. Everyone would be flocking to that bank. And this is a great time for you to take advantage of that and really make your pledge bucks go a lot farther. And of course, we want to take advantage of the generosity of Jim and Barbara Ballard as well. We appreciate that. A $1,000 challenge grant when we make our $3,000 goal this hour. And we only have a few more minutes the beginning of this hour before we go ahead and talk to Paul Krugman. So I hope you'll pledge in advance so you can just sit back, put your feet up, enjoy the show, and know that you did the right thing by supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Programs like Kathleen Dunn's, Joy Cardine's, Larry Mueller's, the talk programming that you've come to rely on and really has just become a part of your life and your day. Won't you give us a call and help us reach that challenge grant at 1-800-383-9772?
Well, let's see how close we are to meeting that goal. Well, actually, we're at zero, so we have a lot of work to do, and we're really asking you to join us.
We put the challenge in Challenge Grant.
You know, you can really make a difference with your call this morning or your web pledge at WPR.org. Because it turns out that a lot of people who listen to Wisconsin Public Radio are the same people who like to get involved in activities in their community. And you like to make a difference in your community. You like to do something good for yourself and for, dare I say it, the world. And that's what we do at Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a forum. It's a discussion of ideas of on the topic of the day. And we talk about everything from local issues and coffee to world politics. So, you know, if you value something like this, Wisconsin is really unique in the country in having an ideas network and 10 hours a day of this kind of programming that you've come to depend on. So your pledge, your $60 pledge, your $120 pledge, your $500 pledge, really goes a long way toward keeping this service alive and well in your community. So do something good for your community and call us at 1-800-383-9772. I'll say it again because you might be driving in the car and you need to memorize it. 1-800-383-9772.
And please, if you're in the car, pull over and stop before you make that call to make your pledge of support to Wisconsin Public Radio. Or as soon as you get to the office, go online and make your pledge at WPR.org. That actually saves us some money. I didn't know that until someone told me. That actually saves us money when you go online and make your pledge, and it saves paper as well. It's quick, it's easy, it's secure.
And it's accurate.
There you go. That's a plus.
Well, you've put in the information. You can put in some comments. We'll read them on the air if you like, or you can just remain anonymous and know that you've done your part for public radio in Wisconsin.
Well, you know, the important thing is that you do it. And as we've been saying all along during these pledge drives, you are in charge of every step of this process because you made a decision, first of all, to turn your radio on. You made a decision about what station you were going to listen to, this one, and now you can make another decision. You can make a decision to support the radio that you listen to most often and make a pledge of support to Wisconsin Public Radio. It just takes a few moments of your time, and you'll be supporting us for a year. We're starting to get some phone calls now. That's great. We're seeing the numbers start to go up on the screen in front of us. So keep on calling 800-300-800-300. I'm thinking I'm at home. 800-383-9772 or securely online at WPR.org.
And speaking of decisions, John, it's not going to be a decision that you're going to feel a little iffy about when you get home, like that purple and green sweater you might have picked up when it was on sale after the holidays. It's going to be something you feel really good about.
Yeah, I like that sweater.
I do, too.
I'm not naming any sweaters.
I'm wearing it now.
That is a lovely purple sweater, Phil. I don't know why I said purple.
It goes with your eyes.
It will be something you feel good about. We know because when listeners contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio, they continue to do it. They feel good at it. And if anything, they get more involved in Wisconsin Public Radio. The proof is in the pudding there. Why don't you give it a try, and you'll see that you feel like that as well, that it's a pleasure to support Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the right thing to do, and this is the moment to do it at 1-800-383-9772. We look forward to your pledge so we can reach that $1,000 challenge grant. Or also, you can try the web, wpr.org, and we thank you. And Phil Corvo and John Munson, I thank you, too.
And thank you, Veronica.
You're welcome.
All right, we'll talk to you a little bit later this hour. According to a recent poll from the AP, forget about the rebate checks. The thing to do is to get out of Iraq if we want to turn around the flagging economy. This on the heels of an economic stimulus package passed by Congress last week. Today we're joined by New York Times columnist Paul Krugman. He's going to help us figure out whether the stimulus bill can deliver the goods or whether we're in for a much longer bumpy ride. I hope you'll join us this hour with your thoughts and questions about the economy. Do you believe, like most people, that we are in a recession? Will you be voting in the upcoming election with the economy in mind, or do you care more about Iraq? And what are you going to do with your rebate check? We're interested in that as well. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Paul Krugman is a columnist for the New York Times and a professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University. His latest book is called The Conscience of a Liberal. Paul Krugman, so glad you could join us today.
Good morning.
So the economy has bumped a rock as people's number one concern, and most people now believe that we're in a recession, not just peering into the abyss. Tell me, how concerned should we be?
Pretty seriously concerned. I mean, this is the root of the problems right now is that we had a bubble in the housing market and a bubble in the credit market, and those were really, really big bubbles. This looks on the face of it like the causes are substantially worse than those that caused the last two recessions. It's kind of a combination of the technology bubble from the 2001 recession and the credit crisis that we had back in 1990, for people who remember that far back. So this looks reasonably nasty.
And you had said that the last couple of recessions, the end date from start to finish was about 8 months. You think that number is deceiving?
Yeah. You know, the recessions, there's no formal definition, but there's a committee. And basically, the committee defines a recession as being a period in which everything is going down. So as soon as some things start going up, they say, well, that was the end of the recession. The trouble is that in both of the last two recessions, the thing that really matters for people, which is jobs, didn't start going up until long after the official end date of the recession. They were both really 2.5-year employment slumps, not 8 months. And since this one, the causes of it look like a kind of combination of the things that caused the last two, there's every reason to think that's going to happen again.
As far as the indicators go, you mentioned already the housing bubble and the subprime credit, or I'm sorry, what was the other one?
It's the credit bubble, which subprime is part, but only part. So,
are those the two major factors here, or are we looking at things which are less easy to put a finger on?
Well, those are the ones that you can get your arms around. They're enough, right? A reasonable guess is that we had about $6 trillion of fictitious housing wealth created by the housing bubble, and that's in the process of going away, and $6 trillion, loss is a pretty bad thing for the economy. And a lot of that was backed by complicated stuff going on in the financial markets where people basically deluded themselves into thinking they had safe assets. And as they suddenly realize that this ain't so safe, it causes a lot of disruption. I mean, hardly a week goes by now without learning about some market that we didn't know, that I had never thought of, that most people had never thought of, is suddenly in meltdown. So this is serious stuff again.
Well, the Fed has been cutting interest rates along the way, and I gather they're expected to do it further. What do you think about the whole process of cutting interest rates to help the economy?
Well, it's what you do. It helps. The only question is whether it can help enough. And there's really two reasons for skepticism. The first is that if you look at the last two recessions, which, as we've been saying, they really went on for a long time. In both of those, the Fed cut rates a lot. In fact, in both cases, the Fed cut rates more than it can this time. If you look in each case, the Fed cut rates by about 6 percentage points. And we started out at 5.25 here, so there really isn't actually even room to have as big a cut as we had the last couple of times. The other thing is the main thing that lower interest rates does, I mean, it does various things for the economy, but the most important channel, I'm going to start sounding like a real wonk here, the transmission mechanism. But anyway, the most important channel is housing. And, there's no interest rate cut that's going to make people start buying housing for a while, until the excesses of the last thing have been worked off. So we've really got serious doubts about whether the Fed can save us this time around.
We're talking this hour with Paul Krugman. He's a columnist for The New York Times and a professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University. His latest book is called The Conscience of a Liberal. And when we come back, we'll be asking him about a report from Carmen Reinhart and Kenneth Rogoff that's getting a lot of buzz right now, saying that the profile of the U.S., economically speaking, matches the Big Five crises, talking about global crises as far as economics goes. So we'll be asking him about that report when we come back. In the meantime, we'd love for you to join in our conversation this hour. Tell us what you're thinking about the economy, how you're going to spend your rebate check, and whether the economy is more important to you than a rock. The call-in number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There's lots of great programming still to come here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. At 12:30, it's Chapter a Day. Jim Fleming reads from American Creation, Triumphs and Tragedies at the Founding of the Republic by Joseph J. Ellis. That's coming up at 12:30 today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Paul Krugman, columnist for the New York Times and professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University, talking about the economy this hour. And Paul Krugman, you wrote about a report that you say has been getting a lot of buzz. It's written by Carmen Reinhart and Kenneth Rogoff, and it seems to paint a pretty dire picture of what could happen to the U.S., economically speaking. Can you tell us about that report?
Yeah, I mean, we're in uncharted territory for the U.S. It's hard to think of anything that's happened in our economic history that looks quite like the crisis we've got now, except that, you know, as I say, in some ways it looks like a combination of the last two recessions. But one way that economists try and figure out what's going to happen is they look at other countries' experience. And what Reinhart and Rogoff did, these are people who are real experts in international economics. They looked for countries that offer some parallels. They looked at countries that have had financial crises. They restricted it to rich countries, advanced countries, so that we have something that looks like us. And they have a pretty large number of parallels. And they can compare various things like the run-up in housing prices, the run-up in stock prices. Basically, how big was the bubble? How large are the things that you might think would be causing a problem? And it looks the United States ranks up there with the countries that have had really big problems, ranks up there with the big five, which is things like Japan, which had a decade-long slump after its crisis, Sweden, where the unemployment rate jumped from 2% to 9% in the two-year period, Finland, where there was a sort of implosion of the economy. And, you know, that doesn't prove that we're going to go through the same thing, but it says that experience is not something very encouraging.
That sounds pretty bleak. Can you tell me, in the circles like yourself, people who are paying attention, how seriously are people taking that?
They're taking it pretty seriously. Now, the good news is that we actually have learned something from experience, we think. So that one of the things that happened in Japan, for example, was that they were very slow to realize the amount of trouble they were in. So the Bank of Japan, which is the equivalent of the Federal Reserve here, was slow about cutting interest rates, waited a while. And the Federal Reserve here has done studies that leads them to believe that they could have avoided a lot of the pain if they had cut interest rates more aggressively right from the beginning. Which is, of course, exactly what the Fed is now doing here. Looking at some of the other things, the Japanese eventually got to having lots of stimulus packages from the government, which is not the same thing as an interest rate cut. It's spending money. Again, the Fed thinks that they were too slow, so we have rushed to do a stimulus package, though I don't think it's a very good one. In some ways, we hope we've learned something from experience. The other thing to say is that, you know, the United States is different. The only question is how, right? History never repeats itself, but I guess, as Mark Twain has said, it rhymes, and we hope that the rhyme isn't too exact here.
You brought up the stimulus package and it not being good enough, so I want to ask you, I get the sense that you think the stimulus package is okay, but it doesn't go nearly far enough.
Well, it's better than not. It's a little bit of insurance. I would not want to pass up doing something now, but there's a kind of the goal is to get people to spend money. What we're worried about in the short term, what we're worried about is that people will cut back. Housing is plunging. Businesses seem to be cutting back a little bit. People are cutting back because they can't take out home equity loans anymore, and we're worried about that. So what you want is to get people to spend money. That would mean that you should have a plan that is more or less guaranteed to turn into actual extra spending, and that's exactly what we don't have. We have a plan that hands out checks to people. Most of the checks go to people who are not in financial difficulty, who are likely to bank the thing rather than actually spend it. And the stuff that really might have been best, which would have been increased aid to the unemployed, increased aid to the poor through food stamps, aid to people who really would have spent the money, was blocked by the Republicans in Congress and by the Bush administration for ideological reasons. So it's, I mean, I can go and talk about the numbers here, but it looks like it, if the optimists about it are right, it'll shave maybe 0.3% off the unemployment rate.
Hmm.
That's if the optimists are right. I'm actually more pessimistic than that. So it's a good thing, but not a very good thing.
Okay, I want to go ahead and take some calls now, and we've got Ken on the line from Madison. Hi, Ken, you're next.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Professor, I am such an admirer that I often describe myself as a Krugman Democrat.
Okay.
At the moment, one point of difference, I think you I think the Democrats will be united this year and that President Barama will surprise you.
I hope so.
But back to economics. 8 years ago in the campaign, following your references, I found the papers by Professors Gale and Auerbach, which correctly stated that the apparent surplus that existed then was close to a myth, and they turned out to be absolutely accurate. Is there anything comparable out there now that a layperson who tries to be educated on this would simply not find in the popular media, but is important to know going forward of where the economy is headed?
Well, you know, I would say it's actually better now that the rise of econoblogs has actually improved things a lot, so that you can actually, there's fairly readable stuff about economic outlook looking forward that leads you to a lot of good things. So
are there a couple that you recommend?
Yeah, Economist's View, Mark Thoma at University of Oregon has a, if you look for Economist's View, and if you Google it, it'll pop up. Barry Ritholtz, The Big Picture, is a finance-oriented blog. If you go to those two, Calculated Risk. There's someone, we don't know who he is, who belt blogs under the name Calculated Risk, who's been terrific on housing and credit bubble and is a must-read. And, of course, my own blog at the New York Times.
Well, thank you for those recommendations. Does that answer your question, Ken?
Yes, I appreciate that very much.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ken. And we'll go on to Gene in Oshkosh. Hi, Gene. You're on the air.
Good morning, Veronica.
Morning.
Dr. Krugman. Really two issues, and one, I would like you to address the issue between the effect of the economic effect of both solvency and liquidity. If you recall back during the Great Depression, the problem really was no one would lend anyone anything because they were afraid that the assets weren't there to back it up. And the net result is that there was no growth and there was a serious deficiency in the economy. But the major reason I called is the composition of the economy. And as succinctly as possible, we have engaged in a great expenditure of military industrial might. And I wonder, has anyone done any work segregating that aspect, the guns, the ammunition, the tanks, the warplanes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that have gone in, that have been used up in the Afghanistan-Iraq war and in our other activities around the world? And is this an artificial component of what indeed would be an economy that is far deeper in recession or perhaps even in depression? So
yeah.
Solvency and liquidity and the segregation of the economy and the contribution of the armament industry.
All right, thanks
okay.
for the call, Jim.
Thank you.
Just quickly on the solvency liquidity thing. By the way, liquidity is if there's just a sort of a panic and people won't lend and you just need to get them to calm down, then that's a liquidity problem. And you know, back 6 months ago, a lot of people in the Federal Reserve thought that that's what we had, and they poured a lot of money in, and it did briefly calm the markets, but not for long, because people fairly quickly concluded, especially anything that's related to housing, is actually really truly only worth 70 or 60 or 20 cents on the dollar. And so the problem, it's a much more intractable problem. It's not the model people use is what happened in 1998 when there was a panic because long-term capital management collapsed and the Fed was able to restore confidence and it all went away. They tried that again this time and didn't all go away, and that's why this is so difficult to deal with. The military stuff, let me just say, we are spending vast amounts of money by any reasonably human standard on really unproductive stuff. So we're spending about $10 billion a month in Iraq. And, you know, $10 billion here, $10 billion there, and soon you're talking about real money. In terms of the U.S. economy, it's still not that big. It certainly would, you know, we're spending enough in Iraq to pay for universal health care if we spent it at home. But in terms of being a big part of the economy, well, military spending has gone from 3% of GDP, of gross domestic product, at the turn of the millennium to 4+, a little plus because there's some fudging on the numbers. So it's an extra 1% and maybe a little bit more of the economy that's being devoted to this stuff. But it's not a huge factor in the story. It's this is not the peak of the Cold War when 10% of the economy was going to military stuff. We're just not on that scale, however grotesque and wasteful you may think the spending actually is.
Gene alluded to something which I don't hear anybody talking about, and I'm interested. I'm not an economist, and so maybe this is a naive question for an economist, but is the economy, as we think about it now, depression-proof, or is that something that could be looming in the background?
Oh, I think it always could be looming in the background. You know, some of the things that made the Great Depression possible are no longer there. We don't have, we basically had a pig-headed Federal Reserve. This Federal Reserve, whether you think it's doing the right thing or not, is not pig-headed. You have to bear in mind that Ben Bernanke, the chairman, was department chairman of my department at Princeton before he was demoted, so I'm a little biased there. But the Fed is not stupid, which it was in 1929. The federal government itself, just by its existence, by the fact that tax receipts fall when the economy shrinks and government spending does not, gives you a little bit of automatic stabilization, as the jargon has it. But can stuff go very, very wrong? Yes, it can. I mean, we saw economists of my generation are still deeply shaken by the story of Japan, because here you had a modern, sophisticated economy with a government that was not stupid and a central bank that was not stupid, and yet they basically had a 10-year slump. It wasn't as bad as the Great Depression, but they found themselves trapped in something that was kind of a minor key version of the Great Depression, and if it can happen there, it can happen here.
Right. I remember stories during that era of Japanese businessmen committing suicide in droves. And
Yeah, and it was the thing where nobody could, people were just afraid to lend out money, people were afraid to spend. As there was a running joke, may even have been true, that the only consumer durable that was selling well in the late 90s in Japan was safes. For people to stash their cash.
So have we cracked the nut on what caused that, or is it something that's still sort of like Riemann's last hypothesis? Nobody really knows.
Well, we sort of know what caused it, and that brings us back to Carmen Reinhart and Ken Rogoff. What caused it was a big stock and housing bubble that burst and an inadequate policy response, and you know, there are some echoes of that here right now.
Okay, on a cheerier note, let's talk about the rebate checks.
Yeah.
Those will be coming out. I guess they're heading out in May. Do you have high hopes? I know you don't have high hopes, but
no,
do you think they're going to help?
You know, we've got a couple of ways to go at this. One is to ask people what they say they're going to do with it. There's been some polling on that, and most people say, oh, they're going to use it to pay down credit card debt, or they're going to put it in the bank, which is exactly what, from the point of view of the economy, you don't want to see happen. So this is not good. You can look at what happened last time we had rebate checks, which was back in 2001, and that sort of mixed evidence. The estimates I've seen say that something like they believe that we'll get a 0.7% stimulus to the economy out of this. 0.7%, you don't need to know all that, but it's pretty modest. It really does correspond, like I said earlier in the show, to 0.3% off the unemployment rate. I think those estimates are over-optimistic, if you believe the... But, all right, whatever. That's what people are saying. And Nancy Pelosi said, this will jumpstart the economy, and, it's not nearly big enough to do anything like that.
Let's take a call. Here's Eric in Madison. Hey, Eric, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about the rebate check. I was very disappointed that the legislation that passed was devoid of anything that might help, people that actually need it. And my wife and I don't need it. We have no debt, and we're not, going to use it to buy something ridiculous. So I'm wondering if you have any advice about what is the best thing that we could use it for, donate it to something.
From your personal point of view, I'll leave that up to your judgment. I mean, from the point of view of the economy, we would like to have everybody go out and buy themselves two hundred drinks of Starbucks that they would not otherwise have consumed, or something, anything. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's certainly, we're not going to say it's your patriotic duty to spend the rebate check. That's ridiculous. And that's the thing. For most people, it's a small windfall that is not going to affect their ability to afford stuff, and they're going to basically say, there's no reason I should increase my spending because of this. So that's the problem. It's very difficult to get people to spend more money this way. In fact, the only surefire way to make sure that a stimulus program spends money is if the government actually spends the money itself. But that was considered off limits politically this time around.
Talking this hour about the economy with Paul Krugman. He's a columnist for the New York Times and professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University. His latest book is called The Conscience of a Liberal, and we'll be taking more of your calls when we come back. In the meantime, we might have time after that to squeak in a call or two more at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickard, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Still to come today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, we'll be hearing Talk of the Nation beginning at 1 o'clock and going till 3 today. Join Talk of the Nation from NPR News starting at 1 o'clock. Veronica Rickert with you today. I'm in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the economy with Paul Krugman, a columnist for the New York Times and professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University. Let's take another call now. We've got Dave waiting from Menominee, Michigan. Hey, Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, great. Thank you. Professor, I'm a single disabled parent of two minor kids.
Yeah.
I doubt if I'm going to get a rebate check. My question is, the pattern that I see with Republicans now since Reagan is to plunge the country into debt to be able to gouge out of entitlements benefits of people like me. I've seen our benefits have been just absolutely decimated since the war started. And I see that as a pattern. I see it as actually a byproduct of something that is actually part of the agenda. And I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Well, it's a known, it's more or less open strategy. It's called Starve the Beast. The idea is that you cut taxes, and then you say, we don't have the revenue for all of these social programs, or we don't have the revenue anyway for wasteful government spending. But that always turns out to be help for people like you, so it has been a strategy since the Reagan years. It was quite explicit at the time, and still is often. What you can say is that by and large, the unfortunately, it's the small, relatively low-power political groups that get cut. So it is the disabled and the poor. The big programs, which cost the great bulk of government spending, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, have not been so easy to cut. So it's actually turned out to be a way to impose a lot of cruelty, but not actually shrink the government budget very much. So yeah, it's every bit. They'll put it differently, but the long ago they learned that if you run on the slogan, we're going to cut popular government programs so that we can cut taxes, they don't get anywhere. So they try cutting the taxes first and then try to cut the programs. It's kind of amazing.
And Paul Krugman, my understanding was that the rebate checks were more broadly inclusive than had originally been planned, and that those without income would still be getting something. Am I right?
Yes, the Democrats were able to negotiate so that the things, first of all, are partially refundable. So you can get some rebate check even if you wouldn't have otherwise owed enough taxes to get the full tax break. And also, there's made for senior citizens and for veterans in there. But it's still not nearly as broad as was hoped. Basically, I've even talked to the people who were devising this, and everything was conditioned by, well, the White House won't accept X, Y, and Z, even though we know that they're the right thing to do. And so that basically made it not just a crueler, but also a less effective package than it should have been.
Well, it's likely that the next president, whoever that person is going to be taking over either on the heels of the recession or in the midst of one. What steps would you like to see that person take to kind of nurse the economy back to health in the most expedient way?
Well, I believe we'll probably know by the time President whatever his or her name is takes office. We'll probably know if this is in fact a kind of prolonged, if not recession-like entity that I'm afraid it will be. And at that point, I think we need to what would really help would be to actually do some government spending to help prop up the economy. The Fed will be cutting interest rates. We'll do all it can. But what I believe is that this kind of thing that we're doing right now, which is we're going to hand out checks and hope that people spend them, is not a very effective way of doing it. If you actually do things like have the federal government spend money repairing bridges that are falling down, that is an effective way of spending. The usual argument against that is that it takes too long to get going, that you have a recession, and by the time you're government spending comes along, the recession is over, and the economy is recovering briskly, and it's not doing any good. But that's not been the shape of the last two slumps. So the last two slumps have gone on and on and on, and that suggests that maybe it's a good idea. So, in my ideal political world, I say let's have a new WPA. Let's have a small one, but let's compare it to Roosevelt's. But let's actually do a lot of good stuff with the double goal of doing good stuff and also helping the economy. But at least a little bit of that would be something I would hope the next president would be able to do.
I know you're not keen on the rebate checks fixing the problem, and it sounds as though given the percentage point of a bump we're supposed to get, it probably won't do it. But I'm still pretty excited about mine, and I'm wondering if you're willing to share with us what you're going to be doing with yours, if you have any plans for it.
I'm not going to change my spending plans at all. So I guess that means that I'm going to save it. So it'll end up just being parked in the money market fund. I'm sorry. I'm going to behave in exactly the way that the authors of the plan hope people wouldn't.
Well, I'm going to paint my house.
Okay.
Yours sounds more prudent, but yeah, good stuff. All right. Well, Paul Krugman, thank you so much for talking to us this hour. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Paul Krugman is a columnist for The New York Times and professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University. His latest book is called The Conscience of a Liberal. Veronica Rickert here with you, and I'm joined in the studio by Phil Corvo, our director of radio.
Good morning
again, Phil.
Veronica.
And also, we've got with us John Munson, all the way from Superior. John, thanks for coming back.
No problem.
And we were looking at a $3,000 goal this hour for our winter membership drive, and we're almost 1,000 of the way there, so that's pretty good. We want to thank you. We've heard from 15 of you this hour, three of whom are new members, so we welcome you to the fold of Wisconsin Public Radio. And won't you join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio and enjoying the programming you hear and supporting it? It's the right thing to do, and it would be especially appreciated this hour because we have a challenge grant from Barbara and Jim Ballard. They are willing to offer up $1,000 of their money if we reach our $3,000 goal. So we would really love to get to that point today, and you can help us do it. The power is in your hands right now. You can step up by calling 1-800-383-9772.
No better time than the present. And, you know, if you enjoy this program every Monday at 9, it's all things political on Kathleen Dunn's program, Kathleen being, of course, the regular host of this hour. If you enjoy these programs, during this hour only, we have this $1,000 challenge grant, and that's something we really don't want to miss out on. And our goal for the hour is $3,000. It's a very simple process. When you call 1-800-383-9772, the volunteers in the studio, they're members of Wisconsin Public Radio. They'll welcome you into the membership, and they're very nice people. If you're a bit phonophobic and are maybe afraid to call because you don't know what you'll get, these are really nice people. You won't have a nicer phone call all day, I can assure you.
Phonophobic?
Is that a word?
Well, I just made it up. 1-800-383-9772.
Hang on, I want to write this down. Phonophobic.
Or if you really don't want to use the telephone, you can use the computer and go WPR.org. And you know, with the elections coming up, we take the elections very seriously here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Programs like this make you a more informed voter. We have a lot of candidates on the air, and you get a better look at the candidates and what their positions are. And if you appreciate that kind of programming, and again, WPR is unique. There's no other public radio station in the country that produces as much talk programming as Wisconsin Public Radio does. It was based on the Ideas Network, and that's what we are. We're part of the Wisconsin Idea. If you want to be part of that, this is a great time to call. 1-800-383-9772. And if you pledge $120, which you can break up into $10 monthly payments, we have something called the Wisconsin Public Radio membership card, and that's a great thank you gift.
Oh, the member
it,
benefit card. Don't leave home without it. It really is. It really is the card that pays you back. It's good for 2-for-1 entrees at 238 restaurants, but who's counting, around the state of Wisconsin. It's good at, I think, 57 bed and breakfasts around the upper Midwest in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Minnesota. And it's also good at a number of cultural attractions, 2-for-1 admission tickets, and even some online stores are giving discounts for the member benefit card. So when you use your member benefit card, you're getting your pledge back. So you make a pledge of $120 to Wisconsin Public Radio, and you can recover that in the member benefit card. But here's an idea, and I thought of this during the program. One caller was lamenting that he didn't know what to do with his rebate check. Well, here's a suggestion: send it to us, and we will turn it into programming, which will certainly benefit the economy. And but you know, one of the things that when you make a contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, that money goes directly into programming. We turn those dollars into programming in a very efficient way, and so you can trust that when you do make a financial contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, it's going to go where you want it to support the programming that you love. The reason you're listening to this radio station right now is because you enjoy Kathleen Dunn's program. You enjoy hearing All Things Political on Monday. You enjoy all the rest of the great shows that that she does. And that's why you're listening. That's why you should pledge a whatever dollar amount you like in support of this program. 800-383-9772, securely online at WPR.org. Help us get that $1,000 match. When we make that $3,000 goal, it instantly becomes $4,000 because of a generous match from the Ballards, and we thank them very much, and we thank you for your calls as well.
That's right. $3,000 becomes $4,000 once we hit that $3,000 mark. It is a little bit of magic, and it begins with the ringing of phones or with the logging on your computer to WPR.org. Maybe you feel as Roland from Pewaukee did. He just made a pledge as his get-well gift to Kathleen, which is pretty sweet. We'll have to make sure she knows about that, Roland. Maybe you'd like to join Roland in wishing Kathleen well that way, or how about all of Wisconsin Public Radio as well? It's a great time to do it. As we said, we're going for that challenge grant. There's only about 7 minutes left in this hour, so we really need to get the phones ringing. We've got a ways to go this hour to get to $3,000. We're still looking at upwards of $1,700 to raise. You can help us get there with that phone call this hour. Whatever reason you decide to do it, for Kathleen, for Wisconsin Public Radio, for your children, because you want it to be there for them in the next generation, because you think it makes you a better citizen of our nation and the world, those are all great reasons. Whatever your reason is, the real important thing to do right now is just to make that phone call at 1-800-383-9772.
Veronica, you make a good point. Do it for your children. We got a call from Brianne, from Kimberly, and Brianne listens to it every day and loves it first thing in the morning, and she grew up listening to it with her mother. So, you know, if you grew up maybe listening to the Wisconsin School of the Air or some of the programs that...
Let's Sing, Let's Draw.
These are part of our heritage, and maybe you've been listening for a while. Maybe you were a member at one time in the past and let your membership lapse. Well, this would be a great time to come back, and we'll welcome you back with open arms. And don't forget that if you pledge $120, for example, not only do you get the Wisconsin Public Radio member card with discounts at restaurants and arts venues all over the state, but it gets us that much closer to the $3,000 goal and meeting our $1,000 challenge grant that is on the table only during this hour. We've got just minutes left to make that challenge grant. You can do it. You can make the call. You can make a difference. Every phone call makes a big difference here at Wisconsin Public Radio. You can't think that somebody else is going to do it because somebody else won't. Only you can make the phone call. Only you can make a difference for your public radio listening and for your community, for your family, for yourself. Do it for yourself. You'll feel better listening to Wisconsin Public Radio when you're a member. I guarantee it. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
You know, it's as someone who occasionally guest hosts on this program, Veronica, you and I have something in common. The thing that always strikes me is how many great guests every week we have on the Ideas Network. That 10 hours a day, five days a week of call-in talk probing that gets programming that gets produced. Where else would you be able to have direct interaction with such amazing people like Paul Krugman, this morning's guest, the guest that's going to be on next hour talking about food, all the great insights that we get from all over the world and all over the United States, from various parts of the political spectrum? You get to interact with these people in real time, ask them questions directly, and it only happens here on the Ideas Network. We know that that's something you think is important, and so we're asking you to put your money where your values are and give us a call at 800-383-9772 or go to our website and pledge online at WPR.org.
Yeah, there are only 4 minutes left in this hour to help us get to $3,000. 4 minutes left to go. 4 minutes for you to get your call in at 1-800-383-9772 to help us reach that $1,000 challenge grant. Tammy in Wautoma has said, I cannot imagine waking up without listening. I have become an addict. And let's invite you. Why don't you try to suspend reality just for a moment here and imagine what it would be like if you woke up in the morning and there was no Wisconsin Public Radio. There was no Joy Cardine or Kathleen Dunn. What would that be like? We're not saying we're going away. That's not what's happening here. But just put a finger on how much Wisconsin Public Radio means to you, what it means to have that company in the morning, that guide to help you sort through the day's events and the news, and just what it means to be a human being alive. Wisconsin Public Radio does that for you. And this is the time that you can say, thank you, I do appreciate it, and I'm so glad you are there when I turn on my radio in the morning. Call us at 1-800-383-9772 and make your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. Become a member.
We are there when you tune in for us 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. We're always there for you whenever you tune in your radio. Now we're asking you to be here for us. with about 2 or 3 minutes of your time with a phone call at 1-800-383-9772. Make the political conversations possible. We talk to lawmakers and journalists and political personalities. And if you're a political junkie, if you love this kind of programming, if you're addicted to it, as some of our callers have said, help to pay for it. We're on the honor system here at Wisconsin Public Radio. We can't charge you a dollar every time you tune in, but we're asking you to take the responsibility for having public radio in your community and making the phone call. Is it worth a dollar a day to you? If you didn't, it is to me. If I didn't have public radio and I had to put a dollar into my radio every day to make it work, I'd do it gladly. I'd put more than that in because I'm a public radio junkie, and I have to have it. If you have to have it too, it's only here because of you, and it's only here because of your phone call at 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772. We're about halfway toward that goal. You can pledge all the way through the news, of course, but do it now.
Yeah, let's not leave that $1,000 laying on the table. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pretty simple proposition. We need that $1,000, and so we need you to go to the phone right now and give us a call at 800-383-9772. You listen, therefore you pledge.
Very simple. 1-800-383-9772. And as we said, you can pledge right through the news, but we are running out of time, and we need you to seize the moment. Carpe diem. I said I wouldn't use Latin on the air, but there is. Carpe diem. Seize the day. Become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio and support this program. Support Kathleen Dunn and Joy Cardine and Gene Farrakhan and all of the wonderful programs you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. And say thank you to the producers as well, Rhonda Fanning and Carmen Jackson, who do an extraordinary job. I'm Veronica Ricker with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I thank you, John Munson and Phil Corvo.